We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It feels like Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami. Miami, 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 Miami.
It feels like Miami.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the EB Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas, and with me today, an esteemed panel of our finest analyst members. We have our StreamB co-founder and 2K coach, Frankie G.
What a do? What's up, guys?
You know, Frankie, speaking of StreamB, I know you just did a Spider-Man thing recently. Ugh. I learned today that J.K. Simmons is played the newspaper guy in the original trilogy. Yeah, I did not know that. I only know J.K. Simmons as a bald person in Whiplash. So I learned that today on Twitter, and I was like, holy, because I think it's his birthday or something. I was like, holy shit. So I learned something today.
He is legitimately one of my favorite actors. Whiplash was so good.
I'm not like a huge movie guy, so I don't like know a lot of actors. So like I know J.K. Simmons. Also, he played a character in Legend of Korra that I love. So I knew him from there. And that. So yeah, so just a small side. Also with me today, we got Kenny. What's up, Kenny?
What's up? By the way, J.K. Simmons is always going to be Schillinger from Oz to me. I recommend that show. It's real graphic and gross, but it's one of the best shows ever. It's underrated because it's so graphic and gross, but it's a great show. But yeah, I'm here. Happy Monday.
On Netflix?
No, it's on HBO Max.
Right, we got to tell the people. We got to direct the people where to go. Lots of listen. It's a new year, new shows, new stuff going on. Shout out to Attack on Titan. Started again yesterday for fans of that. If you know, you know. Guys, we have tons to talk about today. You know, by the way, rest in peace to Bob Saget and Flores' Dolphins career. I liked him. I know that some people didn't like him.
Oh, my God.
What? Bob Saget, obviously a legend.
Okay, I was like, yeah, I know you weren't a fan of Brian Flores.
No, I'm Bob Saget's a fucking legend. I love Bob Saget. Really funny comedian, too.
Rest in peace.
So rest in peace to the legend. I couldn't believe that happened yesterday. Guys. Heat have their biggest win of the season on Saturday. They go into Phoenix and they absolutely, I don't even know what the correct verb is. They absolutely, it was a statement game, like to the highest degree, not a national TV game, but you know, people in the league and in the know were watching that game. Miami dominated pretty much from the midway in the first quarter onto the end of the game. It was as decisive a win against the alleged best team in the league that you can have. The Heat now have wins at Phoenix, at Brooklyn, at Chicago, at Utah, at home against Utah, at home against the Bucks twice in a blowout, at home against the Bulls. Frankie, what they're doing this season, undermanned, is absolutely nothing short of stellar.
Spoach of the year, man. He's there's been many years you could make a case for Eric Spoelstra that He should have gotten more credit for doing what he did with the big three, for doing with the 30-11 squad, for doing more with less, for the bubble run. There's a lot of great years in Coach Spo's coaching career that he hasn't gotten. A single Coach of the Year is a joke. I know it's not a huge like award. Like you can tell who's a great coach without that award. There's a famous joke that you get the Coach of the Year and you get fired anyways. Like a lot of those coaches get fired that same year too. Shout out to the Raptors. I believe that happened to them.
Dwayne Casey.
Dwayne Casey didn't win Coach of the Year. He won like the Coaches Association Coach of the Year.
Ah, same thing. He's still Coach of the Year. But it's a nice year for Coach Spo to get that recognition. And he's just been fantastic. And Kyle and PJ, as the big offseason additions, have led the way. They've been the most consistent players, not just health-wise, but performance-wise. And they've led this team to a stellar season so far.
Correction, Dwayne Casey did win both Coach of the Year and that stupid Coaches Association Coach
of the Year. Yeah, eat my shorts.
No, you were totally right. I just always remember that wrong. I mean, Kenny, they've been, you know, what Spo has done, I don't think Spo gets enough credit in how he, on the Dunker spot, Nikias said no team shapes ships like an Eric Spoelstra regular season team. And I thought that was like a great way to put it, because they went from a heavy pick and roll team to a lot of Jimmy and Bam, you know, a lot of just Kyle spotting up and waiting and maybe triggering one set and then kind of flaring, to just a symphony of movement, off-ball screening, a clinic of cutting, of knowing your role. And he has got a lot of these role guys to buy in, with Kyle at the throttle, with Hero being himself, has rejuvenated Duncan Robinson after a slow start. They have looked night and day, and they're different teams, right? Their defense isn't as good as the team when everyone's healthy. And I think in the playoffs, you know, the style with the stars will prevail. But just, Kenny, the way that they were able to reinvent themselves midseason is just, you don't see that a lot in the league.
Yeah, Spo is just having, I said on Hot or Hangover Time, he's having probably the best season of his career individually. Just going into each game, picking out each team's weaknesses. Like, for example, I also said, the Suns are the worst team in the league executing against zone defenses. So Spo implemented it, took it back out, went man sometimes, went zone sometimes, switched the zone around. He's just doing, he's getting creative because he has to with his personnel, but it's working. You also have to give credit to PJ Tucker, obviously. And Spo's also never coached a point guard like Kyle. He had LeBron, who was a floor general, but he has somebody at point guard now who he doesn't necessarily need to score, can focus 100% on being an extension of him. And so that's also working out. I got to give credit to Spo, and I got to give credit to Kyle.
And
PJ, you can plug him in anywhere, and he's going to get the job done, whatever job you need him to get done.
Kenny, that's one of the things today that, and Frankie, you're nodding your head, like what they're getting out of PJ this season is like, I can't even think of a fictional thing you could have asked for out of that spot. Maybe a little more rim pressure, but other than that, the dude is shooting 47% from three. He's putting the ball on the floor and making plays. They're using him in the short roll. They're using him as a screener. They're using him as a handoff guy. He's guarding basically 1 through 5, right? They had him on Booker yesterday, did a fantastic job, and he guards centers often. I just get upset when people see how good he's been and are looking like, okay, well, how can we upgrade our 4 spot? I'm like, is that really the reaction we should have?
Start your and Bam.
Bro, what?
It's ridiculous.
It's fucking hilarious. Carly Tiana says in the chat, wait, Kenny remembered what he said on Hot? He was drinking Tampico then.
I don't remember much of what I said from Hot, but I do remember that part.
And then everybody's talking about your Wi-Fi. It's doing great. Man, PJ's been such a revelation. I mean, we knew what he would bring defensively a little bit. But it's hard to expect him to be able at this age to bring that consistent effort and energy and versatility. You know, he just had a playoff run, and he played a lot of minutes for the Bucks. He played a lot of key minutes, made a lot of key plays. He was a big reason they came back in the finals against the Suns because of how well he did on Booker. And he did a great job on the other night. I think he's been everything and more that Spoles kind of dreamed of from that four spot. He's allowed them to continue to play small without giving up rebounding and toughness inside. You know, him and Kyle are big reasons why the Heat lead the league in charges by almost twice. I think more than twice as many as the second place team. They're just been outstanding additions to this team on both ends.
I like what Chad's saying. They're running the offense through PJ freaking Tucker, and it looks like it's always been that way. Tone Speak says that, like, they and I think, you know, you can kind of see it a little bit in Yurt as well. They have a really good plug and play for fives that are a little skilled, right? And Well, we've talked, I'm not going to bring up Yurt's finishing numbers and all that, because he had I think what his best game of his career was, you know, with the assist numbers and everything. But, you know, with an Eric Spoelstra team, even going back to Bam, even going back to Bosch, you know, you put a guy at the high post, you know, at the elbows, you know, at the break, and you either trigger handoffs or you're passing or you're running offense through your bigs, right? And your guards play off of it. And when you have skilled bigs or when you have guys that buy into their role and you have a lot of movement and shooting, you know, those guys are going to look really good. And you have a guy like PJ, who's just a really smart guy, really smart basketball player. And he's, you know, he's surveying the floor. He knows what he's doing when he goes to handoff, knows how to seal his man. He's getting him on the short roll, you know, picking guys apart. The shooting has been incredible. It's just, he's been so good on a value contract for them when their $15 million guy this season has been, you know, by all accounts, little not himself. Duncan Robinson had a great game. And I think he's really, in the last 10 games, he's really kind of coming back to himself. But, you know, when you got to win a title, you got to hit on those value contracts. So it's like guys like Gabe Vincent, guys like Max Strus, guys like PJ Tucker, like you got to hit on those guys. Markieff Morris, right? Dwayne Dedmon. They're just getting so much production from their value contracts. And their like top guys haven't really played up to the level other than Jimmy that you think that they can get to. Because I think Bam, by all accounts, has had a little bit of a down year for him. I know he hasn't played a lot, but it's just the numbers haven't looked too great. Eye test kind of matches that. You know, Kyle, we know about the shooting numbers, although he's looked fucking fantastic. I mean, what he's been doing is just incredible. But he's never the big scorer in the shooting. So it's like, I just don't know. This team is so difficult to talk about because they're doing this without their key guys. And when their key guys come back, they're going to look totally fucking different. Right?
And so, right. Yeah. But I do want to say two things, though. So adding to the point about PJ, I do want to give credit to Siobhan. She corrected us because I have been saying that Spo unlocked things in PJ's game. And that may seem true, but not necessarily, because when he was in Houston, he was playing with James Harden. So his role was just stand in the corner, let James dribble the air out of the ball, try to get 60. If they help on him, be ready to shoot. He went to Milwaukee. It was, okay, let Giannis control everything. Let Giannis attack the basket. If they help on him, be ready to shoot the three. Now he's on a team that runs more of a motion offense. They want as many playmakers as possible. So he's getting the opportunity to do more things. And Bam, he was having a down year before he went out. And I do agree with that. But we are overlooking something with him. So we all agreed that the Heat went into Milwaukee last year in the playoffs and they were exhausted. They just had nothing left in the tank. And so we were excited because they finally got an offseason. They got eliminated. They got an offseason. Everybody went on vacation. Everybody got in the gym. Everybody got their rest. Everybody came back. Bam, went to the Olympics. And so he still hadn't gotten that rest up until this injury. And so now when he comes back, I'm expecting to be re-energized. His knee will be a little better. And so I do have high hopes for Bam getting those numbers up when he comes back.
I mean, the shooting is a little concerning to me with Bam Frankie's at 37% mid-range shooter for the year. It was at 45% the year before. a little bit of a regression. I don't know, you know, and I do like the looks he's getting. Again, I think it's a bit of a small sample, and the ball did change, and he, you know, all that stuff and new role and everything. So I think he's the easiest guy to plug and play when everyone gets healthy, because, you know, I mean, I think I saw people like, oh, well, you know, when Jimmy and Bam come back, you know, what do we, you know, do they got to move Bam? Or I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, you think Bam can't do what Yurt Seven is doing? What the fuck do you mean? Like, you, I think the conversation kind of, the it just gets away from people at times, right? Like, they're really good now. Their defense is suffering, and they basically break a Miami Heat 3-point record every game. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, and there was also Kyle was, I mean, I said this on Hot, but do you know, do you know what Bam ranks 12th on the team in?
Points?
Games played.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
It, like, hasn't been available. He's, like you said, Duncan and Kyle were struggling shooting. That's going to affect all his on-the-court numbers. The ball, different role. Like, you have to give these guys a chance to figure these out. They're, every player is going to go through a slump unless your name's LeBron James, unless you're like the one of top one. Like, there's Hall of Fame players. Bam's not at that level yet. He's still growing. He's 24 years old. Bam's only a year older than Yurt, and he's been in the league for like 5 years now. All right, he's having it was a different role. He's posting up a lot more. He's got his shooting numbers have dipped a little bit, but he's only played 18 games. He's gonna figure that out. And he's been dealing with that hand injury. I'm glad he's finally get some time to rest, like Kenny said. But we saw at the end of last season, he was playing with a hand wrap. And so this is something that's been going on for a while. I don't remember if it was the same hand, but I'm not worried about Bam at all. Like you said, he's the most plug and play guy. I am curious how they adjust with Jimmy more. I would love to see the ball more in Kyle's hand when Jimmy's available. I think Jimmy plays very well off the ball with Kyle. We saw how bouncy Jimmy looked early on, how energized he looked, being able to run in transition, get easy hit aheads for layups and ones and free throw line attempts, just getting those outlet passes. I want that kind of offense, and I think that's more consistent and reliable than having the Heat break a 3-point scoring record every game.
So since December 1st, so that's about when Bam went down, the Heat are second in the league in 3-point shooting. They're 0.1% off from the Bulls, who are number one in that span. The Heat are also putting up the 6th most attempts in that span. Only the Bucks, the Rockets, the Hornets, the Jazz, and the Timberwolves are shooting more. All those teams not shooting as well as Miami. Second place is 2 percentage points behind the Heat, which is just a ton in these rankings. So, I mean, the Heat just shooting the fuck ton out of the ball, and they're hitting a ton of threes, and that's, you know, that's just really the way that they're playing. A lot of motion, a lot of shooting, a lot of cutting, and it's really Lowry, who's an incredibly unselfish kind of guy, you know. And I tweeted this the other day, like, when they were playing the Suns, they're extra passing the fuck out of Phoenix, right? Caleb making that extra pass, like, they're giving up, it's the cliche, you know, giving up good shots for great shots. So that's Kenny, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and I think that can continue when Bam comes back, because I know the panel knows this. I'm not sure if the whole audience knows, but when we talk about gravity as far as spacing and everything else, that's not necessarily only 3-point shooting. So when Bam comes back, you're replacing a bad roller with Yurt, who we're not really going to get into because he had a great game. You're replacing him with an incredible roller. And now you have Duncan. I believe he's shooting 41% since his 3-point streak broke. You have Tyler, so now if they get into a pick and roll, you have a defender who has to decide between following Bam on a roll or taking care of Tyler as a pull-up threat. And so I think his adjustment won't necessarily be seamless, but I would say after a game or two, they'll look great.
I'm excited. I think there's so much to look forward to, and Jimmy's looks like he's going to be questionable for tomorrow. A Wednesday in Atlanta. Rather long injury report, and I kind of wanted to take some time on the pod to kind of talk about who's in and who's out, because it's kind of confusing right now. So, via Ira Winderman, Heat report for Wednesday in Atlanta: Bam out, Dwayne Dedman out, Marcus Garrett protocols out. Markieff Morris, who is now entered health and safety protocols, he's out. KZ Okpala wrist is still out. That's a weird injury.
I didn't know about that one.
I mean, he had the wrist injury, you know, going into the Houston game. And at one point I thought it was like the Heat trying to finagle their way into like not having enough players. And this has been an issue for a while. And they're thin at their front court still. Victor Oladipo still out. Wonder when he's going to be nearing return. Jimmy Butler is questionable. We have Gabe Vincent, Udonis Haslam back and available clearing protocols, which I can't believe in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm like, Udonis Haslam rejoining the roster. Thank God. They need that body because I, for one, am sick of Chris Silva.
Oh, yeah.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
No, it's been great to see Udonis have these little moments and stretches. And I feel like he energizes the team, not only the arena, but the elephant in the room, Mario Chalmers. What the fuck, man? When is he going to get some PT? Spo, he hasn't even got garbage time. This is bullshit.
They just extended Kyle Guy for an extra 10-day. Curious when the chomp. So they have two extra 10 days. They have three. They have technically three 10 days they can play with, right? They have the extra roster spot. They have the 15th spot. They have the two guys in protocols, Garrett and Markieff. So Silva's one of them right now. Of course, my camera goes out. So Silva and Kyle Guy, they've re-signed. So they still have one to go. I hope they give it a Rio.
Because they had no fucking problem selling those jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
They sold a lot of jerseys, I bet. And they haven't fucking even let that man sniff the court.
The other kid kind of sent out a really nice tweet about the Heat, saying how like he was really thankful to represent their organization and everything. Huh?
Yeah,
I forgot his name. I was like scrambling to look for it. Listen, this is that kind of season, man. So, you know, they play against Atlanta on Wednesday and then at home against Atlanta on Friday. You kind of hope that Rio can get a chance. Hopefully they sign him to a second 10-day. I don't know that they'll do that. I hope that they will. Maybe they just want to do right by him and give him a game in front of the fans.
Got to.
I mean, I would like that. You know what I mean? I think we'd all be happy, you know. Who knows? But, you know, that's going to be something to monitor. I think his 10-day expires today or tomorrow. I think tomorrow, right? I think it's tomorrow. It was the 26th that they said? I don't remember. Oh, because he signed the deal, I think, a day after they announced it, so that they had delayed it. So we got to see about that. They have a lot of moving parts right now. I do think that Haslam playing for Silva is something that I want. I don't know about you guys, Kenny. I'm very over the Chris Silva experience, and I would really just like UD to play 10 minutes and then just that be it.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks because Chris Silva seems like such a great person, but it's just he just doesn't – he gets lost a lot of times. He makes a lot of boneheaded plays. And he is – another problem is he is an energy guy. So in his first stint, him coming in – providing that energy that he would really need. But now they have Caleb who does and who also has skill, who can also suddenly shoot this season. Great defender. And so now there's no real need for Chris Silva in that sense. So now he's just kind of out there trying to figure out the basketball side of it. It's just not looking good.
So Chalmers did expire. I think it might have been yesterday that it expired. So it would appear that they haven't renewed it, which appears unlikely.
Bullshit.
So there we go.
Yeah, that sucks for him too, because he was supposed to be replacing Kyle, and then Kyle got better after like a couple of hours.
Man, we had so much fun over a dude that did not play a single game.
And Gabe came back, and Kyle Guys played well too, so they had a reason to re-sign him for the 10-day.
I got kind of upset when people were like, oh, so should we like cut Caleb or cut Marcus Garrett for Kyle Guy? And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. It was a Ha Hoops editor, I think it's Surya Fernandez that tweeted that. I'm like, can we don't, why do we got to do this? You know what I mean? Like, what's.
So for one, they don't have to. They can convert Caleb, which they're going to do anyway. Caleb is a Heat player. He's not a 10-day guy. He's never seen Sioux Falls. So they're going to convert him. Then they'll have a spot to give to Marcus Garrett. So they don't have to get rid of him. And I like Kyle Guy a lot. But this is a very – they have a lot of guards they can use. And then they already have Marcus Garrett in the pipeline. And so I understand he has his offensive struggles. He's not a great finisher. His ball handling can tighten up. But that's why he's in the development pipeline. And you see him on the other end on defense. There's so much potential there that he can't get rid of that right now for a guy who's had a couple of good games.
I'm glad Alf is here to join us. Alf, we're talking about Twitter president Alf. Alf, we're talking about that tweet earlier in the day. It was Michael Matt Pineda, not Surya Fernandez. I apologize to Surya Fernandez.
Wow, that's right. It feels racist.
Not put that evil on you. Matt Pineda. Who is a writer for Hot Hot Hoops, not the editor, I apologize. Tweeted out at 12:50 p.m. today. Would you be in favor of the Heat letting go of Marcus Garrett if they can sign Kyle Guy to a two-way deal? Alpha, I was talking about how fucking ridiculous that is. Kyle Guy had one good game. His little goofy hair was flopping around, and everyone's ready to move on from a kid who clearly has, like, a talent that is really valuable in the league.
Yeah, I mean, we got to stop doing this. Like, it takes away from the enjoyment of like watching a 10-day guy go nuts. And then you say bye. Like, thank you, Kyle Guy, for your service. But like, we're overdoing it with so many of these guys. Like, there's guys back end of the rotation, guys that are not going to play playoff minutes. You got fans wanting to start them. And I'm not going to go into the Yurt hate. I'm not doing it. Because, like, I'm enjoying watching Yurt. It's fun. Like, it's a fun thing. And then it's like, you have a nice, fun thing. And it's like fucking Lenny from Of Mice and Men. Oh, cute Yurt. Start Yurt. You're going to fucking kill the guy. Like, what are we doing? Like, chill. Like, you killed the fucking bunny. Are you happy?
Alf, I was saying earlier how, like, people are like, oh, you know, like, when Jimmy and Bam come back, like, what are we going to do about Bam in the lineup? I was like, you think Bam can't do what Yurt's doing? What the fuck is Yurt doing? That's so special.
He doesn't point the same way Yurt does.
Every time I see him in transition, I'm just seeing he's pointing at the guy.
We know, Yurt. We know. Run your ass back here.
That's the move, though. When you know you're not going to make it, you kind of point to make it seem like, okay, at least he's communicating.
Yeah.
He's
the Suns had a 3-on-3, and Yurt was in position to pick somebody up, and he just kept pointing and picked somebody up that was still in the backcourt. And it went from a 3-on-3 to a 3-on-2, and the Suns got a layup.
So I do want to address something really quick. In the chat, somebody said Yurt rebounds with like ellipses, like it's kind of a shady thing to say. You got to remember how Bam was rebounding when the season started, when they put him in a drop. Yurt's rebounding like that. He is a good rebounder, but he's also not switching onto the perimeter. It's not like Bam can't rebound.
But the Heat were a good rebounding team.
Yeah,
Bam was on the floor. Like they were crushing dudes on the board. So the rebound numbers weren't as gaudy, but he was still getting double figure rebounds.
No,
he was averaging. First of all, Yurt just gets off his misses. Like that's another thing we know.
He steals a lot of rebounds too.
but he's a good rebounder. And that's the thing. I don't want to do the hating on Yurt stuff because like this, there's a lot of low hanging fruit with Yurt. The pointing, you know, the field goal percentage around the rim for a 7-footer that is abysmal. The fact that everybody wants him to be a stretch five and he's hit 1 3-pointer in his entire NBA fucking career. All that aside, he has been really good for what he is, you know? Like, he has played above his head. And when a guy does that, you can't do nothing but clap for him. You know what I mean? But when we just talk about rebounds, like, individual rebounds is such an overrated fucking stat, okay? 100%. Like, I'm so, like, rebounding as a team is very important. But who gives a fuck who gets the rebound? Like, it doesn't matter who on your team. As long as the Heat get a rebound, and maybe it's because Bam was out on the perimeter, hit a switch, and fucking denied access to the paint, right? And then, you know, you got other guys boxing out. You have good rebounders all over this team from their position. You don't need 16 rebounds out of your center. Like, just that the number of rebounds for one individual player just don't fucking matter that much. But that being said, I like Yurt. He's fun, the fun guy, but stop fucking killing your rabbits. And if you've never read Of Mice and Men, that's very confusing to you.
Kids have to still read that. I read that in high school.
I love Yurt. I've always, since day one, I watched him in summer league. I like Yurt's potential and everything. But what we can't do as a fan base is we can't have all these Hassan jokes and then start all over with just praising raw rebounds.
That's what I said on the timeline, and everyone got mad at me.
No, Yurt is not Hassan. Yurt seems like that, a good person. But he's not dumb.
We should have learned our lesson.
We have to look at more than just the raw rebounding numbers. We've been in a situation before.
We have watched.
E5 Arrow says Of Mice and Men was trash.
Just learn the lesson, all right? We've watched the Heat year after year now, ever since Hassan left, without a rim protector. I fucking hate that term, by the way. How about you just don't let people get to the rim? Better. That's way better. Because by the time they're at the rim, even if you have a great rim protector, odds are they're going to make the basket because NBA players within 3 feet of the rim are really fucking good, except for Yurt. But we've watched year after year the Heat be one of the best paint defenses in the league without the so-called 7-foot rim protector, with Bam Adebayo as their big man. All of a sudden, Bam's not a center. They can't protect a rim without a 7-footer. They need a legit big man next to Bam. None of it makes any fucking sense. Like, we've watched them deny access to the paint for years now. Like, nobody gets in the paint on this team. But all of a sudden, like, you need an elite rebounder. You need a 7-footer in the paint. Bam is too small. Too small for what? To beat the shit out the Sixers every time they play? Like,
that's what got me in Kenny's mentions.
Oh, yeah. And the thing also, I think people look at rim protection as just block shots.
Yeah.
And that's not, you can be a great shot blocker and a horrible rim protector. The same we can have a high steal number and be a bad defender, like Allen Iverson was. It's just because, okay, you can get 4 blocks in a game, but if you gave up 12 points on dump passes because you wanted those blocks,
you left your feet and it was a wraparound pass behind your back, Hassan. I mean, blocks, what is it? Cal AU in the stat says blocks are a bad stat. It means you let someone get to the rim. Thank you. Some teams funnel to a big by design.
Yeah, like Utah. Right?
Like Utah, yeah.
Like Utah. And that is the way they play. And that's fine, but he'd have been so successful defensively without doing that. I don't understand this whole idea, because I heard you guys talking about earlier, people trying to take PJ Tucker out the starting lineup.
Yeah, that's what we started the show with. Like, what more do you want? So, Alf, I actually have something to back up. I got a little Alf's eye test for you. The Heat are third in allowed shots at the rim. So they only allowed 29.9% of opponent shots at the rim. That's tied for second place. They're behind Golden State by seven.
Wait, Golden State with the other legitimate 7 foot rim stop?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Draymond Green, you know, noted rim protector.
Oh, no, Draymond's too small. Draymond's too small. You need a 7 foot two guy out there.
He's too small.
Have you not watched 90s basketball? Come on.
Heat allow. They allow the eighth highest field goal percentage at the rim, which is an improvement from other years because it used to be they allowed the highest field goal percentage at the rim. Teams just never got there.
You don't get there. Who cares?
Yeah, they don't get there. They allow the most 3-point shots in the league by percentage as well. So that's but you know their 3-point defense is good. Teams don't shoot a high percentage from three. They're but they you know they shoot a lot of them. So that's kind of the premise of Miami's defense, and that's been Eric Spoelstra's defensive scheme for the last few years. So, you know, they'll and Alf, we were saying how, you know, they've changed the way they've played since everybody went down. They've been a more mobile. They've changed their defense to kind of drop, show high, blitz, do all sorts of weird, funky shit, you know, some zone mixed in here and there. And, you know, Spo, fucking magician for just changing their identity halfway through the season, which, by the way, we haven't talked about this enough. They basically got guys off the fucking street to come play for them. Got guys to buy into a system that's not easy, right? And a bunch of dudes who don't play. Like, so when Yurt and Marcus Garrett and, you know, Max, and all these dudes are in training camp, they're practicing the Heat's normal scheme, right? Now, all of a sudden, Spo's like, okay, all that shit we worked on in the summer, forget about it. Yeah. New shit. Let's go. With limited practice time due to COVID. And it's just fucking amazing. Like, the shit that they've done is amazing. And it's not for the fans to be like, well, now we got to sign Kyle Guy and make you the starter.
That doesn't, yeah, the point is, how is that, like, how do you just watch this and just enjoy it and then come away thinking, this is better than what we have?
No. Like,
what are you doing?
Could you imagine going into the playoffs with fucking Kyle Guy?
Time to trade Jimmy. We don't need him. We're winning without him.
Game is back. Kyle Guy is over.
I saw someone say Kyle Guy deserves playoff minutes. Why? Why does he deserve playoff minutes?
Guess who?
I don't know. Why? What did he do? What did he do that he deserves fucking playoff minutes?
Yeah, that one game.
One fucking game. And I like Kyle Guy. You see, this is what they fucking do to me. They make me say bad shit about these fucking guys that I like. I'm enjoying. I'm like, fucking Max Strus is awesome. Gabe Vincent, I used to hate on him last year. Having a fucking season of his life. Caleb Martin's a fucking find out of nowhere. Yurt looks great. Kyle Guy is fun. Even fucking Highsmith. Hey, look, it's fucking Highsmith.
At least you knew his name. I didn't know his name today.
Fucking Chris. Well, I heard that. I was proud of you.
Never gave
I
never knew these fuckers the trade machine.
Chris Silva is the only one that's like, fucking A, bro. Come on. But besides that, like, it's so much fun, and then everyone just fucking ruins it. Like after the
we
game,
just beat Phoenix by a million points, and then the timeline is like, well, you know, time to uproot this team.
Yeah, like, oh, just train, sell everybody train, off train. Apart. Like, I saw like a lot of Highsmith like takes, and I was like, come on, guys, come on. He played like 3.5 minutes a game, okay, and he just ran around. He was, I think he could he be a nice player, sure. But, like, what did he do that was so fantastic that people were like, oh, man, not we got to find a spot for Highsmith?
Alf, did you see that deal that somebody, like, on Lakers Twitter put up? They put up, like, all their scrubs. It was, like, Ariza, Kendrick Nunn, THT, that white kid. What's his name?
Austin Reeves.
Yeah, for Jeremy Grant.
I
like
the more names than you.
For Jeremy Grant. And they're, oh, like, yeah. Lakers fans are like, no, we're giving too much.
What the fuck? You know what's funny about Lakers fans saying that shit? Every time they sign a bum off the street, whether it be Avery Bradley, Stanley Johnson, they're immediately plugged into the fucking starting lineup. Like, immediately. Yeah. You have nothing if Avery Bradley gets picked up 2 days before the season starts and is your starting shooting guard night one. You don't have, there's nobody on your team that's too much to give up for Jeremy Grant. Like, you fucking crazy. Suck.
And that's crazy because they have 30 roster spots filled.
How do they keep having roster? You need to get rid of four guys. The NBA is eventually going to find out you have fucking 32 roster spots filled.
Alf, that
every fucking day they're picking somebody up off the street.
Alf, that team fucking sucks. So if you look at like adjusted net rating, which is net rating that accounts for the strength of schedule, Lakers are eighth from the bottom, right next to the beloved New York Knicks.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, like, they're bad.
They fucking suck, dude.
They're really fucking bad.
Heat, by the way, are fifth in adjusted net rating. Only the Warriors, the Jazz, the Suns, and for some reason the Cavs above them.
The Cavs,
they're good.
Statistically, are fucking.
They got bopped last night though by Clay. I would have hated to have been any team going in there for the Clay game.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Did y'all see what Draymond Green did? Because I thought that was really cool. So Draymond was hurt, couldn't really play, but like as a symbolic gesture to his teammate, you know, kind of, you know, and like started the game just to be taken out immediately so that he can go through like the intros with Clay and everything, and that just hurts your per game stats. You know what I mean? Like, most dudes won't do that. Like, I don't know. I thought that was like probably a small thing. And maybe people are like, oh, whatever, you get paid millions. But these dudes won't even take a half court shot because they don't want to hurt their percentages. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I thought that was some cool shit.
Yeah, it was. It's very Draymond-ish.
Yeah, Draymond did that. And every player on the Warriors showed up to the arena in the Clay jersey.
That's fucking cool, dude.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's a beloved dude, man. Like, yeah. who says something bad about Klay Thompson? Even other fan bases, like,
everybody loves that dude.
There's Jack.
Jack. I feel like
Raptors fans love him because they owe him a championship.
I feel like the Heat have like some of that too. Like, they have a fuck ton of fun. Like the whole Jimmy middle finger with Mac thing, that was fucking hilarious. I love on Hot, you were saying like, look at Tyler be mad and start laughing. Like, they seem like they're fun dudes. Like, they seem like they really fucking like each other. I don't know how much that matters, but
it doesn't. They like each other because they're winning. It's really hard. You have to be
three-peat hating each other. It doesn't matter at all.
You have to be Kobe and Shaq to like win that much and hate each
other. But it's
like
they made the finals.
Yeah. But the thing is, you can win that much and hate each other only if you've done so much winning that now it's not a big deal anymore. Like, we've done a three-peat. Now it's more about, you know, my endorsement deals.
Yeah, it makes it fun though. It certainly makes it fun when they're doing that shit.
Look how much the fucking Heat hated each other in 2014. Fucking dudes. Now they talk about each other. Oh man, the good old day.
Ray Allen hated Spo.
Everyone fucking hated Chalmers. Chalmers hated everybody. Everybody was sick of Dwayne sitting out. Like, bro, that 2014, they fucking hated each other. And then now they talk so glowingly about it. They fucking despise each other.
They were all sick of Spo.
We didn't like them by the end of fucking 2014.
Bro, we were done. I was so
sick. I couldn't wait for LeBron to leave. I can't even lie. I couldn't wait for LeBron to leave around that time.
Damn, yo. I had to say that, but I was like sick of Rashard. I was just sick of them.
What happened is everybody started to defer to LeBron, and it just wasn't working. I knew it wasn't going to work, and he was going to end up leaving anyway, so I was just over it.
I was tired of the fans. I was like, fuck, Beasley's not going to fix this shit.
Oh, my God. The call for Beasley. When you're calling for Michael Beasley in the NBA Finals, it's done. You're done.
It's over.
Like, I fucking hated that team. That was, like, one of the most miserable finals trips as a fan I've ever experienced. Like, I didn't like that team anymore. I was sick. They fucking looked miserable.
I thought we were gonna win because remember they went 1-1 tied and they had the whole fucking AC debacle. I was like, oh my god!
I never thought they would win. I thought that was
Heat 5.
Yeah, I knew there was no chance.
I never thought they would win
because remember they were gonna win game one and then fucking AC broke.
Yeah,
and they bopped them on the road in game two.
And they would have come like, back 2-0 and then lost the next four.
No, yeah, but like coming home, I'm like, oh, Heat 5.
You can see when LeBron checks out. And so I saw that and I just knew it was over.
It wasn't even that. I mean, well, Dwayne was just so bad. I mean, we don't have to relitigate that. But what I did want to close the show on was something that happened on Saturday night that was really fucking funny, which was Eddie Johnson, the broadcaster from Phoenix, searching his name. Our friend Leif over at Five Reasons tweeted out an innocuous Eddie Johnson's really upset on the broadcast, or he keeps getting mad on something like nothing, right? And Eddie Johnson just quote tweets Leif and starts fucking going off on Heat fans and Heat. Listen, nobody wants to watch their team take a fucking massive L like that, but this dude searched his name and is embarrassing himself. Suns Twitter is like, bro, we don't claim him. They're doing the Mark Simpson meme. Alf, you saw that shit?
Dude, you can't be a broadcaster and do the mad online thing. And like do the I'm not mad, I'm happy online thing is really weird. Like Oh, why would I be mad? We have 30 wins. Why the fuck are you searching your name on Twitter if you're not mad? Like, you're obviously mad. Don't anybody who listened to the Suns broadcast, I didn't. But all the people who did were like, yo, this dude was just fucking upset. Talking about where do they find these guys, blah, blah, blah. Like, he was, you could, but like, just come on Twitter, like, yo, hey, guys, I was pissed off. I love the Suns. But instead, like, oh, we got 30 wins. Why would I be mad? Shut up, bro. Like, everyone knows you're bad already. Like, you searched your name. I don't think I've ever done that.
And we. He's the fucking team broadcaster.
You know what about we?
Eric Reed and Crotty would say we, most likely. Like, Ron Rothstein does it at halftime, and it's always jarring.
It's so jarring.
It's like
Ron Rothstein trying to hoop.
He a coach of these dudes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I feel like Ron Rothstein feels like he got up from the bench, walked upstairs to the halftime studio.
Will Manso.
I'm like, oh, listen, I'm not in the locker room, these guys. Let me tell you what's going on the bench, guys.
I think Eddie Johnson deleted the tweet to late, which is really funny.
That makes it worse, though. You got to keep the tweets up.
You got to keep the tweets up. Because he told Leif, I don't even know who you are. Hit him with the I don't even know who you are. Bro, why are you searching him then?
So weird. It's so weird.
That was the biggest L Phoenix took. Like, Suns fans were like, if it's not enough that we just got embarrassed by Duncan Robinson and Chris Silva, now we have Eddie Johnson making a public mess of this. Just let's take the L and, like, go on into the night.
Have you guys talked about Duncan at all and, like, how everyone needs to slow the fuck down on the whole Duncan thing? Like,
we've been saying this all year, though.
Yeah.
But all the people that were all up in arms about it, they're quiet now. They're
either quiet or saying, see, I told you he should come off the bench. Like,
yeah, that's the move. That's the move from them.
Dude, he was doing this in the starting lineup before he went to the bench. Like,
that has no bearing on any, because he was missing open shots.
Yeah, and so, the thing about the start, and whether you start or come off the bench, the only difference is the first 6 minutes of the game. And then it's just rotations from there. So it really just doesn't matter. It's rotations and matchups.
And Spo has shown you this season, when it comes to Strus and Duncan, he's going to play the hot hand.
Yeah.
And then when they're both hot, they're fucking unstoppable. Like, so why would, like, oh, we got to trade Duncan, we got Strus. Why? Both of them, when they're both hitting, unstoppable. Like, and like, Duncan closed out the other night because he was a hotter hand. But Strus also had a good game. Like, it's okay, guys. Once again, don't kill the fucking bunny.
No, trade Duncan, or if Strus is cold, you play Kyle Guy. That's it.
Oh, well, you got Kyle Guy. What do you need Duncan for?
I see people trading, like, Duncan and PJ for stuff. And I was like, what the fuck are we doing?
How are we trading PJ? Like, during a season where teams are so stripped down to where you signing guys like Haywood, Highsmith, why are you looking to get rid of anybody?
Oh, we got to consolidate. For what?
Oh, they just find anybody they need.
Why are you consolidating when you already see health is an issue? Like, you want to do a 3-for-1 kind of trade to backfill with Kyle Guy and Haywood Highsmith. Like, why are you doing that? Because you saw Kyle Guy score 15 points in a game? Like, you saw Kyle Guy do that, and now you decided, oh, we need to trim our bench down and bring in Kyle Guy. Like, what are we doing? It's not just that. Every trade is for a fucking four. Every trade I see is for a power forward.
No, it's for a center. It's for a center to put. It's all John. I saw people wanting John Collins. Perfect front court
partner next to Bam.
And I'm like, what does John Collins do for you, Frankie? Let's ask you, because I haven't even. People were like trying to get John Collins. Shout out to the pool party. I don't understand what Collins gives you. That's better than what PJ gives you for this team. I'm not saying Collins is better. Just for this team, fit. They're not the big three Heat that, like, LeBron and Dwayne can fix fit issues, right? Like, I don't really get it.
I don't get it either. He doesn't fit. Like, you're going to be searching for what PJ gives you. Because who's guarding Devin Booker when you need him to?
Who's guarding Durant?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Put Bam on Durant all game? Good luck.
Good luck putting him on Giannis. Like, what are we
shout
doing?
Out to Tiff. Tiff's been saying no about John since last year. He's not a good defender. Yeah.
He's really not. He doesn't fit here. And you know what happens? And this is not even a knock towards Heat fans, because this applies to a lot of people. It's not necessarily a bad thing. People watch only the Heat, and then a name pops up in rumors. They look at this Basketball Reference really quick, and it's like, oh, look at his stats. He has to come here. That's not the way things work. On paper doesn't mean shit. We learned that from the Steve Nash Lakers. Like, we can't just go off that. We have to fit is really important. And nobody, I don't care what deal you make, nobody is going to fit better than PJ Tucker.
Also, why are we shipping Deadman off somewhere or to the end of the bench out of the rotation for you? Like, Deadman has been so good. And also, what about Keith?
Yeah.
Keith was awesome before he went down.
Keith's the one I'm worried about just because Caleb's been so good. I don't know.
But
your bodies, though. You
matchup. No, but you have these guys for matchups. If a team wants to go big against you, if there's you have a built-in playoff adjustment that you know works.
You have security for injury, too. Yeah. Like, it's not just a playoff matchup. You guys, if one of these guys go down, look at the Bucks. DiVincenzo goes down in the first round last year. He was their starting guard, and they had depth to back that up. And guys got more minutes in the back end who have been playing all season because of COVID, and they were able to rely on them.
Now we need trade in a position that is not of need right now.
Yeah, it's a COVID season. Like, you need to
you need everybody. And you know I'm not worried about Caleb also, just because you can't really box him into a position. Just plug him in anywhere. He's going to get his job done.
Yes, that's the value of wings, though. That's why I like wings that can play like a small ball four and shit, because he could do anything.
But G, you've said this a number of times, that if you're going to trade Duncan, which I don't have a problem trading Duncan. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, not like.
These aren't all Duncan jerseys on the wall. Like, I'm okay, believe me. But if you're going to trade him, you need to trade him for a wing.
Yes.
To me, like a 2-3 guy that could put pressure on the rim and shoot efficiently from three and can guard up, guard down, like a very versatile player is who I would trade Duncan for, not a 4 or 5. Like, this doesn't make a lot of sense.
There are two names that I think are going to be available that I would like, that I would be okay moving Duncan for that fit. Obviously, Harrison Barnes, who I've talked about for years. The other one's Jeremy Grant. And I don't think you're not going to be able to get in the game for those guys anyway with just Duncan Robinson. So that's just moot at this point. But those are really the only two guys, because like we've talked about this, the guys that are going to be available with so many teams in the play-in and so many teams like really
way more than Duncan Robinson.
Yeah. And there's, you know, the Bulls are going to be able to outbid you. And by the way, Detroit can just say, fuck it. I'm going to keep them and I'm going to sit on it until next year or the offseason where, you know, he'll have more value.
Well, Kenny's always railing on the timeline against people talking about Duncan's contract. These people are not going to understand how regular run-of-the-mill Duncan's contract is until they start trying to play with the trade machine. And you realize Duncan ain't making that fucking much money. You hear $90 million over 5 years. Oh, we're overpaid. You can't trade anybody decent for Duncan Robinson straight up. Anybody. Yeah. Nobody's making $15 million a year this year that's going to be a game changer for your team.
And the way that his contract structured is it jumps from year one to year two like a big. So right now he's really not making a lot, which allowed them to do a lot of things. One thing is stay under the cap because under the tax. And you may say, oh, you know, every time I make a point, oh, you know, who cares about Mickey Harrison's money? Well, when they're going to be a repeater tax team, when that Tyler Hero extension kicks in, that he's going to be extension eligible this summer, you might have to be a tax team because you're going to have Jimmy, Bam, Lowry, and Tyler Hero, and maybe Duncan Robinson, right? You're going to need to have not be a repeater tax team. So not being in the tax this year is really important for their future contention. So for everybody kind of complaining, and they can't trade Duncan for a guy with a bigger contract. That's one of the things that has to go out the window. And if you package Duncan and PJ, now you're getting rid of PJ. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? You're
absolutely not. 40% of your starting lineup.
Duncan is the 84th highest contract in the league.
Incorrect. No, according to Twitter, nobody makes more than Duncan Robinson. Nobody. That 90 million contract.
You want to talk about some of the guys around, like right around Duncan's contract?
Oh, please do.
Torian Prince, Patrick Beverley, Thaddeus Young.
Yikes.
Those are the guys making money around that.
Yikes.
He's making Thad Young money, and people are upset. They're upset. Dude. Like, oh, my God. He's a starting shooting guard.
People just there's just an obsession with, somebody said in the chat, new toys. That's all it is, because I think what happens is people, and I don't even want to mention this name on the podcast, but people just have all these hot take Harry-isms about players' value and all this stuff, and they completely ignore that player's value to the Miami Heat. Like, yeah, okay, people have this idea still that all Duncan does is shoot, which hasn't been true for 2 years. He could be more consistent with his cutting and his putting the ball on the floor, but fine. But even if all Duncan can do is shoot, if you're one of the best shooters in the NBA, saying all he can do is shoot is kind of undervaluing what he does.
What are the
slump
best
or not, we know what he is.
What are the best in the history of the NBA? Like, we got to stop with this. Duncan's a good No. He's historically great. Like, historically great shooter. Like, I think, like, 100 threes, 200 threes, 300 threes, 400. Like, every 100 threes, he's the fastest to – he's the fastest to hit all these marks in the history of the NBA. In the history, like, we're talking about Klay, Steph, Reggie Miller, Ray Allen. He hits those benchmarks in less games than any of these other guys. I'm not saying he's as great a player as those other guys that I named, but when I talk about just pure three-point shooting, historically, he's one of the best of all time.
Do you want to know some players that Duncan has more threes than this year?
Go ahead.
Zach LaVine. Anthony Edwards.
These are lies.
Bogdanovich. Number one offense in the league. Jason Tatum. Evan Fournier, the savior of New York City. Lonzo Ball, the dude that everybody wanted over Duncan because they said we shouldn't pay Duncan, we should pay Lonzo. Carmelo Anthony. Trae Young. He has more threes made than Trae Young this season. That Damian Lillard. Duncan has hit more threes than Damian Lillard. He's hit more threes than, check notes, Tyler Hero.
These are all lies.
Mike Conley, LeBron James, Kevin Love, James Harden, Eric Gordon, who's having a fantastic year, Seth Curry, CJ McCollum, all dudes that Duncan has shot more. And again, volume's not everything, but he's a good shooter. His average, water reaches his limit, Eric. He's coming up to being an elite shooter. The numbers are getting elite again. He hits a ton of threes. He's always a threat. He's always moving. He's a really good fucking basketball player who, by the way, out of all their white guy shooters, out of the Tres Leches, which is a new nickname for Strews, yes. Duncan, and Tyler, he's the best defender of the Tres Leches. Frankie, which leche is Duncan of the Tres Leches? Is he the condensed milk? Is he the – what is he?
I don't know. You put me on the spot there.
I know. I just thought
there's whole milk. He's definitely whole milk.
Yeah.
This is the Max would be evaporated and then Tyler would be condensed.
But I was just looking at the, we've talked a lot about other shooters that have been struggling this season. Bradley Beal's shooting 29.8%. Like Luka's shooting 31.8%. Paul George is shooting 32.3%. Damian Lillard's 32.4%. Kyle's at 32%. There's a lot of shooters who are – Tatum's at 33%. Hardaway's at 33%. There's a lot of shooters who are historically good shooters who are struggling this season.
No, only Duncan's struggling. You're lying.
34%. Russell's 34%.
Fake news.
Mitchell's wrong. 34%. Like,
wrong.
A lot of shooters who are shooting bad this season.
Fake news.
Tiff in chat says Max is coconut milk. Okay. So the tres leches are evaporated milk, sweetened condensed milk, and whole milk. So you're saying that Duncan
is the whole milk is Duncan because he's the whitest.
Yeah. Condensed
The evaporated milk is Max because, you know, he's not all white.
Yeah.
And then condensed milk is Tyler because, you know, the moves are sweet.
There we go. We fucking got it. So
did you see the comment, Jimmy and the white guy, Jimmy and Tres Leches says cafe con leche?
Cartiliana says Kyle is four leches. So have you ever heard of cuatro leches, which is at the top dulce de leche, right? It's like a caramel.
Oh,
you know, that's like kind of
more,
like
sweet. That'd be more Tyler Johnson, but Kyle would.
I cannot believe we did a deuces bit unironically where we're naming Harry, you know, real ones. No, shout out to this podcast.
But I do have to speak on, because all this Duncan talk still, for whatever reason is going on, is because he had a slump in November, which he's completely out of, we've seen, but you got to understand, right now, which the Heat benefited from, Steph Curry, without a doubt, greatest shooter of all time. There's nobody you can put in the conversation with him. He's been having a horrible month or so now. I think he's at 36% in this past however many games.
Steph for the season is at 38.7. Like Tyler,
and so
stuff. Like that's crazy.
Yeah, it's just like you can't just be so hard on your own team's players and not look around the league for what's going on.
Shooter slump. It happens.
Look at Steph, Dame, CP.
But why it gets glaring with Duncan is because people think he doesn't do anything else. And there are games where he's not hitting and he literally does nothing else.
Yeah.
And he hurts you. I think the defense is always pretty standard, but the fact that there's times when he's not hitting and he doesn't put the ball on the floor, doesn't create for others, but there are times where he's not shooting well, he puts the ball on the floor and creates for a guy like Max. Or creates for a guy like Kyle. He does stuff, but it is true. When Steph is slumping, he does a lot of other things to help your team.
Yeah, we saw that Miami game.
Yeah, exactly. When Duncan is slumping, it's glaring because there's not a lot of other things
they're shooters first.
Or is he asked to do?
They're shooters first, and that's really, I mean, they have other functions in the offense, but they all revolve around their skill as a shooter.
But it was also in the beginning of the season, they were so reliant on Duncan's shooting for offense as a whole. Now they, you know, they've taken a lot of the pressure off of him.
In 2019. But I thought you were talking about the beginning of this year because
they were kind of forcing the handoffs.
I think he was forcing.
Just like the starting lineup.
Okay,
like,
I give that.
He was kind of pressing himself. He was slumping there. When we started missing guys and they had to start mixing how they played, he started shooting better. The pressure was off him. Max was shooting better. Gabe shooting better. It wasn't all like there were a lot of games where we're like, shit, are he going to hit 15 threes for the game? Are they going to hit 12 threes for the game?
Yeah, well, the whole team wasn't shooting.
Nobody could shoot. Yeah. Kyle couldn't shoot nobody. But now, like, everybody's hitting. The ball's moving really well. Like, it's not all – like, that was the secret to the bubble team is that they had, like, four or five guys that shot 40% that year. Like, there were a lot of guys who were hitting and threats. And last year, nobody could hit threes. Duncan slumped for the first half of the season. Kelly was goddamn awful. None couldn't hit shit. Goran was more to his career averages. Like, everybody dropped down. Like, this team, when they're more balanced offensively and they have got more guys contributing from three and it's not all Duncan dependent, because Tyler slumped last year, too. He shot a career back.
Tyler was slumping before the Phoenix game.
Yeah, he hadn't been playing well.
His shot selection was fucking putrid.
Why is Chad talking about Dragic? Did something happen with Goran?
I think there's one guy who repeated
himself. There's one guy.
Oh, yeah, because he just asked twice, and I was like, did Dragic like...
But I got a shout-out. E5 Arrow is in the chat. He has been active all night.
Oh, yeah, that dude's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you for all the love, man.
Okay, so we can leave on this because we're running on time. I saw this tweet. I wanted to bring it up. I started laughing about it mid-show. It's a New York Knicks Twitter putting a future Nick duo, Westbrook and Julius Randle. Somebody then quote tweets it and says, Madison Square Garden is going to sound like the beaches of Normandy.